With the theme of the meeting, Sacred Shadows, and with the declared goal at times to deal, at least in some part, in the meeting with type and antitype, I'd like to draw your attention back to the book of Exodus, and we'll begin in chapter 14. As justification for this study, I'd like you to consider, though we won't take the time to do it right now, 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verses 1 through 13. Within that scripture, we find out that these things are written for our admonition, that they are examples so that we would not make the same mistakes they made back in this time. This includes valuing the types and the antitypes to the extent that we understand the danger when they're broken. And we're going to get to see an example of that in our study this evening. In Exodus chapter 14, basically we pick up in the context where the children of Israel have escaped their bondage in Egypt. They're being led by Moses, and they are now at the borders or at the shores of the Red Sea. They've looked behind them to find and see that the armies of the Pharaoh have come in and they're collapsing upon them. And they began to scream and to cry in fear and say, were there just not enough graves in Egypt that we could have died and been buried there? We have to come out here to be slaughtered in the wilderness, Moses? It's within this context that God, who's been leading them by a pillar of cloud by day, a pillar of fire by night, takes that cloud and puts it behind them, and it drops it down on the earth like a great fog bank. I saw in some of the advertisements or the warnings about the weather here that there might be fog. I don't know what your fog's like in Alabama, but in California, they call it tule fog. You don't see it other than you see it moving, but you don't see through it. I thought I'd never get used to living in that environment. And yet you do learn, don't you? Well, they didn't learn, and it was right on them that night, and the armies of the Egyptians stopped dead in their tracks. Within that night, God would cause a strong east wind to blow across the Red Sea. But it's interesting what took place up and to and through these events. As the people screamed to Moses about what was going on and why this would happen, he said, you need to trust God. In verses 13 and 14, he says, don't be afraid. You'll never see these Egyptians after today. You'll never see them again. Our God is going to deliver you. The Lord will fight for you. But, you know, I don't know how many times I read this before it really sunk into me. Verse 15 of Exodus 14, where it says, and the Lord said to Moses, why do you cry to me? Tell the children of Israel to go forward. He says, you want me to do everything. And you know, one thing you'll see time and time again in the scriptures, that even in the midst of great miracles, in the great deliverance of God for his people, he expects his people to step out in faith and do something too. He never just does it for us and we get to sit there and enjoy it. And it wasn't going to be that way here. He says, go forward. And to help advance that, he says, Moses, lift up your staff, raise your hand across the waters. And that when this wind started coming down across the Red Sea. Now, I've been out on a lake fishing when the wind came up. I've seen white caps. Sometimes if it's not too windy, you see those wind tracers across the water. I've never seen a laser-like wind that could absolutely part water. And that's exactly what happened on this night. It howled and blew all night till that wind had been blown apart, and it created a dry seabed for them to travel across. And that's the context that God says, you tell them, go forward. Now, in my mind's eye, I suppose I think, well, how big a deal is that? I mean, he's made you a big old canyon wall. Get it. But then I think, you know what that's like? Have you ever been in between two tall canyon walls, a narrow spot to get through, and how intimidating it can be to look up and think, what if a rock started falling? What if the whole thing started falling? And that's a mountain that's been there since anybody knows when. Can you imagine walls of water created that night before? Exodus chapter 15 and verse 8 says, it was like congealed. Now, I don't know what that vision that puts in your mind, but to me, that's jello. I don't know if it wobbled. I don't know what happened. I've seen women, when you go to potluck, they got fruit in that jello and it kind of suspended itself. And honestly, I got to say this, I wonder, is that what the fish did as they were close, if they were right near? Were they congealed within this? I don't know. But I do know Exodus 15 and 8 says this was also through the heart of the Red Sea. Some quote unquote scholars have tried to explain this away like some kind of sandbar. And And we understand, and really we're supposed to believe Pharaoh's armies drown on the sandbar, that women, children, men, and herds and flocks cross safely. No, they went through the heart of the Red Sea. And I tell you, that would have been intimidating. All that wind, I know what it's like to get a 60, 70 mile an hour wind blowing. It's scary. They've dealt with that, and now they've got to go through this tunnel. And as they go down through there, you have to know the fear. And yet they had to step out in faith. Maybe they stepped out in fear. Maybe they just stepped out in despair. But as Clint already taught us on Sunday night, this was a picture of something to be. It was a shadow of baptism that would come in the later days, in which they were surrounded by water on the sides of a cloud over their head, and they were baptized unto Moses in that event. And how anybody wants to say now our baptism is anything less than immersion and complete immersion not only ignores every example of it within the New Testament, but they ignore the great shadows and the great types that are throughout the Old Testament. They finally made it across. Whatever their steps were led by, fear, faith, or despair, Pharaoh's armies, at one point that cloud bank finally lifts and they're able to see what's going on, and they don't have fear. Pharaoh's armies, they bolt right in behind them. They're going to catch them before they get away. It never occurs to them that the God of these people is fighting for them and might actually be their enemy. They pile in there anyway. These aren't steps of faith. These are steps of ignorance. These are steps, if you will, of defiance. And they simply lead to death. And I'll tell you, anybody that comes to try to take the path of God and do it defiantly or ignorantly is going to face the same fate that Pharaoh's armies did. It will end up in destruction. May we ever humble ourselves when we come to obey the voice of the Lord and do it His way. Well, you remember the story. The children of Israel get out on the other side. And about that time, those congealed waters uncongeal. They re-waterify and crash in upon Pharaoh's armies. They're all slain. The children of Israel get to see those bodies, those implements of war, wash up upon the shore. And they began, you know what they did? They began to sing. And tonight we have had awesome singing. From the first service here, I got to admit, came into this auditorium, just a few people over here and one over here, and I thought, oh, what's the singing going to be like with this new book? It was great. God's people know how to open up their heart and sing, and God knows how to choose something that will fill a room with joy and faith when maybe none of our voices in and of itself would be enough to stick around and listen to. God's ways always work. They began to sing. Moses, the song of Moses, and then the song of Miriam. A song of victory and deliverance. A song that says, nah, people going to hear about this. They're going to start hiding. When we come across, they're going to learn what happened to the Egyptians, and they're going to hide. They're going to cower down. They're going to be still and hope that they can be still enough until the people pass by, O Lord, until the people whom you have purchased pass by. Their faith is as high as it can possibly be. Now, we know what that's like. Perhaps that's the way it was the day you were baptized. Well, there was nothing that was going to stop us. We had complete faith in God. His way was right, whether it made sense to us or not. We just went through the Red Sea. Nobody ever did something like that before. We did it. Our God can do anything, and our enemies will be afraid. You remember what happened next? About 3 days from them, they run out of water. They came to the waters of Marah. We don't have time for that. God performed a miracle, made it happen. You go to the 16th chapter. You find out that they've gone about a month and a half now. And before we think that's no big deal, I mean, hey, they got the power of God on their side. They're just traveling, no big deal. We love to camp, don't we? Boys and I, we love to backpack, put our pack boards on, just go, go, go. Yes, it's tiring, but you just go back for more later. But that's different when you live that way. We'd been up in the mountains, my brother-in-law and I, about 25 years ago. We came back to the church in Sonora that used to be there. Stayed with the Macquaries as we washed up to worship with them that Lord's Day. Said, why don't y'all come back up with us this next week? And Barbara Macquarie says, oh no, I went camping for a week one day. She said, it reminded me way too much of the way we used to live. That wasn't fun. That represented to her a hard, hard life that they had fought and worked to get out of. That wasn't pleasure. That wasn't going to be her vacation. That's the way these people are living. It's not like us taking a pack trip. It's hard. 45 days from now, they're running out of food. They're hungry. They're worried about their little kids. They're worried about everything. And they began to murmur and complain against Moses. I don't have time to go through that all right now. But basically, God performs a miracle. He gives them quail for dinner, and he gives them manna for breakfast. Like wafers of honey, the Bible later describes that manna. It literally comes from a Greek Hebrew word that means what? What are you having for breakfast? What? It's that who's on first, right? They didn't know what it was, but it took care of them. It sustained them. It's sometime later. They've been fed. They've moved on. Exodus 17 says they began to die of thirst. Now, if you've ever been thirsty, oh, you know what that feels like. I've never been so thirsty, I thought I was going to die. Been so thirsty, I thought coaches were trying to kill us. But I've never been so thirsty, I really thought I'd die. But they did. They complained to God, or to Moses. They wanted to stone him and go back to Egypt once again. And so God told Moses, okay, I got time out. If you go read in Exodus chapter 17, it says we're going to die of thirst, us and our children and our flocks and our herds. Finally, that clicked with me one day, and I scurried back there to the 16th chapter and back to the 17th chapter. They said they were starving to death. And now they say they're going to lose all their herds and flocks without any water. And why didn't they eat their herds before they complained to God? And I couldn't get many answers to that. I started reading the books I had, started going online. I found a few explanations. I didn't like any of them, but I'm going to tell them to you anyway, because I think they make good points. Some people said, you know why they couldn't eat that lobster? That was their economy. That's all they had, is they went through the wilderness and tried to. That was how they took that wool, made their clothes. They could barter and sell it. They didn't eat those beasts. That was their economy. So you're telling me that people would rather die than lose the business? Now, before we get to looking down on them so bad, there's Christians that have the same attitude. Maybe it's been me. Maybe it's been you. We'll complain and murmur about our lot in life. We've got it right there. We don't want to eat it because that's our moneymaker. They could have eaten them. Somebody says, well, you know, I don't think that's what it was. There wasn't enough anyway. We learned that later in Numbers account at later events, that they didn't even have enough even if they wanted to feed them all. So you're going to die of starvation saying that ain't enough for me to fill us. No, you eat it, and then you worry about that, right? You take what you have, you worry about what you don't have later when you don't have nothing. And yet, before we look too down on them, sometimes we won't go into situations that we know it would be best for us to go into, but we don't think we have the resources to finish. We just don't know that we can do it. It's time for us to step out in faith, use the resources, and worry about that if we run out. That's what they needed to do. Somebody says, that's not it all, Greg. That you don't understand the religion and the faith of these people. I'm like, I sure don't. Tell it to me. They said those flocks and those herds were for their ability to sacrifice to God. They had responsibilities. They had sacrifices to perform. Now, if that's not the ultimate hypocrisy, people that will complain about a God and the state in life and their situation, but they're not about to miss the worship. Now that really starts to hit home, doesn't it? We wouldn't dare miss Sunday morning, but would we murmur and complain against our God and think he's not deliberate? I wonder what they were thinking about those animals when they said they were starving to death. I don't know. But back, time in. Now they're dying of thirst. What's going to happen? God says, I want you to go to the rock in Horeb. I want you to go to that rock, and when you get to that rock, I want you to smite it. And when you do, it'll bring forth its water. Now, in the King James, it says his water. In the New King James, and other translations say its. You look that up, and you find out his, it's really in the masculine. It's not neuter like its. It's masculine. He goes ahead and does that. He smites that rock, and forth flows this water, and it takes care of all of their needs. God has delivered them once more. But I want you to know, we're going to fast forward now for time's sake. Many, many years later, they have already come to the gates of the promised land, and because of the whole story we don't have time to go into, they're kicked back out for 40 years. Once again, they get to a point they run out of water. They think they're going to die of thirst. They don't seem to remember this miracle before and say, Moses, can you get God to do that again? No, they just complain and say, why weren't we just slaves in Egypt? God says, Moses, we're going to do it again. So this time, Moses, I want you to go and I want you to speak to that rock, and it'll bring forth his water. Moses gathers everybody together. He gets the people all there to do this. And quite frankly, it's been up and down. I wish we could even describe for you in the amount of time we have how frustrating this must have been for leadership. So if you're a leader and you think, oh, it's up and down, I don't know what to do. Imagine Moses. And he absolutely loses it. He loses his temper. He gets up there. God has told him to speak to this rock. And when he starts to speak, he says, hear now, you rebels. Must we fetch you water out of this rock? And the Bible says he takes his staff and he smites it twice. And forth from that rock flows water. Wow, I was kind of afraid it wasn't going to come out because God said, speak to it. And he smote it this time anyway, twice. But the water came out. I guess it doesn't really matter that much then if we don't do it exactly like God said. That's what some theologians will say. They'll even use that passage to say it. Unfortunately, they stop reading way too soon. But they say that in the context of some things going on in religion today. They'll say, well, if it was that bad, how could they grow like this? All these good things happening, if our doctrine's not right, why would this happen? You know, I can't answer all those questions, but I can tell you what happened to Moses and Aaron. Come here. That's basically what God said to Moses and Aaron. He got them aside and he said, you messed up. You did two things wrong. He said, one, you did not believe me. And I want you to know today, when we don't do what God says the way he says it, we do not believe him. We don't have faith. Someone says, oh, I do too. How can you say I don't have faith? Because that's what God said. He says, I told you to speak to that rock. You smote it twice. You didn't believe me. When we don't follow God's doctrine, it's a lack of faith. Second of all, he said, you failed to sanctify me before the people. We learn that again in 1 Peter 4, verses 10 and 11, that when we speak as the oracles of God, then God gets the glory. That's how God is sanctified. It's not up to us. They messed it up. And he said, Moses and Aaron, because you didn't believe me, because you failed to sanctify me, you're not going in the promised land now. You're going to die out here just like those who are over age of 20 were going to die before my people went back into the promised land. Because he hit a rock? I mean, okay, Greg, so he said, one, you didn't believe me, and two, you didn't sanctify me, but somebody says, Greg, I'm the kind of person, I got to know more than that. Well, first of all, you don't. But thanks be to God, he didn't leave us without knowledge. The prophets who wrote these things didn't even all understand them. We learn in the New Testament. We learn that angels even desired to understand some of this. What you're about to know today, the prophets who penned them and many angels in heaven when this happened didn't get. But by the time you get to the 1 Corinthians letter, 1 Corinthians chapter 10, the Bible says, moreover, brethren, I do not want you to be unaware that all our fathers were under the cloud, all passed through the sea. All were baptized unto Moses in the cloud and in the sea. We already talked about that. All ate the same spiritual food. Well, we kind of ran over that. And all drank the same spiritual drink. For they drank of that spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ. There was a type. There was a shadow God had prepared before the foundation of the earth. And Moses and Aaron, they were all a part of it. The first time it was smitten, this time you speak to it and you say, I'm still not with you, Greg. It's a rock. Hebrews chapter 9, verse 25. Says Jesus was to be smitten but once. And then what do? Is Jesus crucified every time somebody wants to be saved? No, they come in faith. They come confessing that he is the Son of God, speaking and being immersed in the watery grave of baptism with a life of repentance to walk forward, now added to the church. And Moses and Aaron took that type and broke it. And it ruined it for God. It ruined it so bad, God said, as much as he loved Moses, Moses, now you're not going to, you won't lead my children into the promised land. Now, I do want you to understand tonight, that can be a very depressing story. Our God is not a heartless God and a God without love that would destroy a man of faith just because he made one mistake. Moses didn't lose his eternal reward. Read Hebrews chapter 11. He's in the hall of faith. He's going to be there, and we look forward to meeting him. But he faced consequences on this life that cost him his reward here. And I'll tell you this too, if he had continued that kind of behavior throughout his life, he would have lost the heavenly reward. That's what we learn from this. But he didn't. He learned from his mistake. He walked a life of faith. When God said, do it this way, that's how they did it, whether they understood it or not. Whether it made sense, whether Aaron's sons were going to be the priest, that's the way it was going to be. And if anybody wanted to argue with it, argue with God. Yeah, that included Korah and his 250 buddies. 252. Today, I want you to understand, if we get nothing else, too many times people just say, you know, okay, I see it says that, but I just don't see why it matters. Is that really? You're going to make a big deal out? You think God really cares? And I'll tell you, we need to believe if God cares enough, whether a man hits a rock with a stick, then he cares enough how we worship when he's taking the time to pin it down, deliver it to us. He expects us to show we have faith in him and obey it. May we never destroy an antitype that God has prepared for everybody to be able to enjoy. Established from the foundation of the earth, may we ever walk in faith.